We are starting a new series today that we've simply called Foundations. And could you just, can we agree together on something this morning, that foundations are extremely important? All right, my dad was a builder. For many years, he built lots of houses. He built church buildings. He built a hotel. He built lots of different things. But the first thing that he did before any of the structure went up in every single occasion was to make sure that the foundation was secure, that the foundation was solid, that it was dug and it was poured concrete or the concrete blocks or whatever it would be, to make sure that the structure had a firm foundation. Because he knew that whatever he built on top, if the foundation was not firm, then the top would not last for very long. So foundations are extremely important. In fact, Psalm 11:3 says this: if foundations are destroyed, what are the righteous to do? I would say if the foundations are destroyed, what's anybody to do? Because the foundations are extremely important. Jesus said it this way. When he was teaching, he said that the difference between a wise person and a foolish person was the foundation that they chose to build their life on. So he said it was the difference between wisdom and foolishness. Now, for a house or for a building, of course, the foundation is poured concrete or concrete blocks like we've got down here on the stage. But for a life, what's the foundation for that? Well, I would submit to you that the foundation of our lives, another way to talk about that, is our worldview. So to begin with this morning, how many people have a worldview? Great. Okay, four of you. Appreciate your participation. But let me explain it a little bit differently. A worldview is simply just a way that you look at the world. It's simply the way you make sense of the world. It's the lens through which you look at anything. It's the filter which with you take everything in and figure out how things work. In fact, everyone has a worldview. And so let me ask again. How many of you have a worldview? Okay, how many of you won't raise your hand no matter what I say? Okay, good. At least we appreciate your honesty about that. Worldviews are incredibly important. They're the way that we see the world and figure out how it works. In fact, all worldviews have to answer some pretty significant questions. Questions like, how did we get here? Where did we come from? What went wrong with the world? I mean, why is the world the way it is? And is it getting better or worse or why? Pretty serious questions. How do we fix things if there's things that are wrong? Is there a way that we can make things better? And what is the purpose or meaning of life? Where do we fit in to things? Those are some pretty serious questions that every worldview has to be able to answer. Now, I believe that there are biblical answers to all of those questions. In fact, I believe there is a distinctly Christian way to look at the world. I believe that not all worldviews, though, and not all answers to those questions are equally valid. In fact, I'm going to suggest that only the Christian worldview makes sense of the world as we see it. That only the Christian worldview actually works. I know that's a pretty bold claim, but over the next few weeks, I'm going to be trying to give you some well-thought-out, hopefully, answers to those questions, and the best I can describe for you or explain to you what a Christian worldview or a biblical worldview really is and what the Bible says in answer as to some of those big questions that we have. You know, you don't have to agree with me. You have to agree with everything that I say, but you at least owe it to yourself. I mean, these questions are so important. They're so foundational for not just my life or a Christian's life, but for anybody's life, that you need to at least wrestle these questions to the ground and come up with what you believe the answers are to them. Because the reality is, every person has answers to those questions, and they've staked their life on the result. They've staked their life on the answers to those questions. So again, over the next few weeks, we're going to be looking at those kinds of things. I believe it's an incredibly important thing because, as I said, even if you hadn't thought about it in terms like that before, you have answers to those questions and you've staked your life on whether you're right or whether you're wrong. So this is an incredibly important thing. It was illustrated rather starkly 10 days ago or so over in Paris during the Islamic terrorist attack. You know, you've been watching the news where the gunman came into the magazine office building and gunned down 14 people. And why did they do it? To avenge the honor, right, of the Prophet Muhammad. Okay, in the Muslim worldview, that was what they were supposed to do. And it was interesting to see the comparison and contrast of different worldviews that were in play in that particular event. Now, I don't know how you watch the news, but I like to watch the news and I think, what could somebody be thinking? Why would someone do that? Why? What would cause them? What kind of a worldview would cause them to do that? And in that incident, I think we saw really three distinct, and maybe the three kind of top worldviews or the most prominent worldviews in our society today at play. Obviously, the Islamic worldview, but then the secular worldview is the worldview that does that kind of takes God out of the equation and thinks that man is kind of the highest authority and that the most important thing is that, you know, I'm my own boss and I can do whatever I want to do. Those kind of people, which are all over the media, they had no framework, they had no reference point to even talk about what happened in the terrorist attack. And it's been like this for years and years as they tried to explain radical Islam and the things that it does, because they have no category for that. In their mind, all religions are kind of the same. And so, in the aftermath of almost every attack like that, you will hear supposedly smart people on the television news compare radical Islam with who? With me, right? With those fundamentalist Christian preachers. And that shows a distinct misunderstanding and mischaracterization of what the different worldviews are. Because even though some people would say all religions are the same and it doesn't really matter what you believe, it couldn't be more stark. Again, the Islamic people who carried out that attack and who've carried out attacks over and over again over the last years, they are doing it because they are avenging the honor of the Prophet Muhammad. It's what they are taught to do in their religion. What did Jesus say? He had a totally different take. He said for his followers that they were to love those who were their enemies. Jesus said that that his followers were to pray for those that persecuted them. In fact, I mean, there's almost an exact parallel. When Jesus was in the garden right before he came, got arrested, the soldiers came, if you remember the story, and they had, you know, the soldiers were armed. And it says that Peter, one of Jesus' disciples, pulled out a sword. He was going to avenge. He was going to fight for the honor of Jesus. And what did Jesus say? You said, Peter, put your sword away. That's not how it works in my kingdom. That's not how my worldview works. That's not how life is supposed to go. In fact, you're supposed to love your enemies and pray for those that persecute you. And so just in recent events, and you can see it all the time if you watch the news with an eye toward what people are thinking, you'll see that these different worldviews are in play. Now, before we go much further, let me just kind of acknowledge that if you're not a Christian and if you're not a follower of Jesus and you kind of wandered in and, you know, you're trying to make your wife happy, you finally, you know, your neighbor was bugging you and you finally said yes, I'm just going to apologize up front because some of what I'm going to say, you're not going to agree with. Maybe none of what I say you're going to agree with. In fact, some of what I'm going to say may be downright offensive to you. All right. And I'm just going to say that out loud and I'm going to apologize up front. But really, with the subject matter, there's not much I can do about that. Because the reality is, I believe that not all worldviews are the same. And the Bible actually has some pretty strong things to say about that. And so, even while you might not agree with what I have to say, I invite you at least to keep an open mind and give it some consideration, if you're brave enough to ask God to try to make things clear for you. Because this is the reality about Christianity. As Chuck Colson said often before he died, he said, Christians don't impose our views on anyone. Rather, we propose a better way of life. The Christian church makes a great proposal. Jesus Christ makes a great proposal, inviting everyone to the table. He said in John chapter 10, verse 10, I've come to give people life. I want people to experience life as it's truly meant to be lived. Jesus was truly pro-life in all of its various forms. The Christian worldview is pro-life. We want humans to flourish. We want there to be peace as God understood it. We want things to be the way God wanted them to be. So I'm inviting you this morning, even if you've never considered the Christian point of view, or you think Christians are a bunch of loons, you may really think it after today and after the next several weeks, okay? But come and just laugh at us. That'll be fine. But just keep coming and be open to maybe seeing a different perspective. The key issue, as we go through all of this ideas about worldview, and worldview is kind of the foundation that we stand on as everybody, not just Christians, but every person. This is great. I'm tall up here. Cool. Worldview is the foundation for which we stand on, and the key to worldview, one of the foundational elements, is this idea of authority. Who has it? Is it you? Is it me? Is it God? Is it someone else? Who has authority? Who makes the rules? It's kind of like in the playground. You remember you're out on the playground and someone starts to make a rule about whatever game you're saying, or somebody tries to tell somebody else what to do. And what's the response? Oh, yeah? Who says? You're not the boss of me, right? Says who? You're not the boss of me. And then everybody, the argument breaks out about who should be the one to make the rules and why and who's the biggest or the strongest or however that comes down. But the reality is, we haven't changed all that much from the playground. Even as adults, when somebody tries to tell us what to do or proposes a different way of thinking, our internal response is, oh yeah? Says who? You're not the boss of me. I can decide what I want to do in for my life. And so the key issue that we'll keep coming back to over the next several weeks is this idea of authority. It's foundational to every part of our worldview, is who is it that makes the rules. And so that kind of leads us right into our bottom line this morning. So in case you fall asleep here just in the next couple minutes and don't wake back up till the music starts playing again, hear this, okay? The bottom line this morning is what you believe about God will determine your worldview. What you believe about God will determine your worldview. Again, it's all about authority. The psalmist writer writes it this way. He says in Psalm 14:1, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. And then he says in Psalm 111:10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The fool says in his heart, there is no God. But the fear of God, the understanding of God, the knowledge of God is the beginning of wisdom. And so the Bible from the very beginning sets up this contrast that there's more than one way, two distinct ways to look at things. Have you ever noticed that? That there's two distinct ways to look at things, that two different people can look at the exact same thing and come up with two totally different explanations about what just happened. Maybe you're married to that person and things happen and you're like totally, like you both see the same thing, experience the same thing, but you come up with two totally different ways of looking at that. Right? The Bible actually has a pretty clear explanation for why that's the case. And often when it comes to worldview things and important matters, it's what we believe about God that determines our worldviews, which describes why two people can look at exactly the same thing but see two totally different things. Now, for an illustration, we're going to put a picture on the screen, okay? And this first picture that I'm going to kind of explain it to you so you'll know what you're seeing when you see it. This first picture will be of kind of an older lady. She has a rather prominent nose and a rather prominent chin, and she's kind of looking off this direction. Okay, so we'll put that picture up there. And how many, raise your hand if you see that older lady with the large chin and the large nose looking that way. Do you see her? Okay, you see her? All right, we'll take that picture away. All right, now the next picture that we're going to look at was actually going to be of a much younger lady. In fact, she's kind of an attractive lady. She's probably a little well-to-do because she has a nice black fur coat on. She has her hair done nicely. She has a nice necklace on that her husband recently gave her. And she's looking back kind of behind the drum. She's looking over her shoulder this direction, okay? Let's put that picture up there and see if you can see that younger, attractive, rich lady. Can you see her? Some of you are saying, wait a second, that's the same picture. You can't fool me. But the reality is there's different ways you can look at the same thing, come up with two different things. All right? Are you with me? Some of you are going, I still don't get it. All right? There's an old lady up there and a young lady. All right. Let's try it again on your own. With no coaching, let's put the next picture up. All right? Take a look. All right. Raise your hand if you see the Eskimo looking inside the cave. All right? Raise your hand if you see the face of the Native American. All right. You can look at the picture, see the same thing that can be looked at two different ways. Now, this next one, before we put it up, let me just tell you that this next picture will go a long way toward describing and helping you to understand your spiritual state at this moment. Okay? So look carefully. All right. Take a look at it. All right. Raise your hand if you see good. All right. Raise your hand if you say evil. Some of you guys. All right. But you can see both, right? It depends on depends on what you're looking for. You can look at the exact same material, come up with two totally different things. The Bible actually has a pretty serious and clear explanation for why that is. And a lot of times, on important things, it comes down to this issue of authority and what we've said with God, who God is. The Bible is, there's no one that's objective, right? There's no such thing as an objective viewpoint. Everybody looks through some sort of a lens. And that lens is your worldview, the assumptions that you've made about life, the assumptions that you've made about God, the assumptions you've made about how the world works. And so there's no such thing as a dispassionate observer of life. Everyone is looking through their own set of lenses. And I present to you, over the next several weeks, I'm going to suggest the idea that the only way that we'll get a clear picture of how the world really works is if we look through a biblical pair of glasses. If we look at the world through God has instructed us to look at the world because he, in fact, created it and set things, certain things up. Now, we're going to look to kind of give some biblical foundation for that kind of a bold statement of what I hope to do over the next few weeks. We're going to look at the writings of a man named Paul. And to give you kind of some background on Paul as to why we should listen to him, and that this whole idea of worldview and how we look at the world and the reality that there's two separate ways, or at least two separate ways, to look at almost every situation. Paul, if he were alive today, at the beginning of his life, he would be considered a terrorist. Right? He would be considered a religious terrorist because he went around killing Christians simply for the sake that they were Christians. Right? If you were alive today, you would know the name Osama bin Laden, and you would know the name Paul. Actually, his name was Saul, because his name got switched during the break, but that's a little confusing, right? The same guy, at the beginning of his life, was a religious terrorist. Then he had a dramatic encounter with God. God actually appeared to him, the Bible tells us, and in kind of an example or an illustration to Paul of how blind he had been to the truth of who God was and the truth of who Jesus was, he physically became blind. And then when he regained his sight, his whole worldview had changed. He saw the world in a totally different area. He saw a totally different viewpoint. He saw God totally different. He saw the world different. He saw people differently. And it changed the trajectory of his life. And so that is his experience. And so he is going to be talking to us and trying to teach us, and in fact we're going to be looking at some little splotches of letters that he wrote to all different churches. He created or started lots of different churches in lots of different cities in that part of the country, and he wrote letters to back to each of them to tell them about how to live the Christian life and how to live life and how to do church. And in each one of those letters he gives some pretty specific information dealing with this whole idea of how it is that the people can see different things or the same thing from different perspectives, and the whole key of the authority and who God is in our life. And so we're going to look at first what he writes to in the book of 1 Timothy. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 20 and 21. He's writing a letter to his young disciple Timothy. He's set up. He's told him, all right, here's how church is supposed to go. Here's how life's supposed to go. And he says, oh yeah, there's this one last thing I want to make sure you know. And he says this, Timothy, guard what has been entrusted to your care. Turn away from godless chatter and the opposing ideas of what is falsely called knowledge, which some have professed and in doing so have departed from the faith. Paul says there's things out there. He's warning Timothy, and if it was true then, it's so much more true now. There are things out there that are falsely called knowledge. Things that a lot of people will look at and say, yeah, that's knowledge, that's wisdom, that's smart. That's what all the smart people think. Paul says, be careful. Be careful, because there's things out there that are falsely called knowledge that if you believe them as a follower, it has the capability, it has the reality of leading you away from your faith. Because Paul says there's some people who have attached themselves to these things that are falsely called knowledge and have wandered away from the faith. So as a follower, as a person who has signed up to be a follower of Jesus, that's serious. Okay, if there's some of these ideas that can lead me away from him, I better know what those are. He next writes to the people in the city of Colossae, and in Colossians chapter 2, verses 2 through 4 and verse 8, he says this, my goal is that they, those people in that church, may be encouraged in heart and united in love, so that they may have full riches of complete understanding. Check that out for a pretty bold goal. My goal, Paul said, is for you people to have complete understanding. How would you like to have that, complete understanding? Anybody? All right? I mean, you could kill it at Trivia Crack. Am I wrong? All right? You got complete understanding about the way the world works, about, you know, physics and math and biology and marriage and relationships and money and finances and religion and politics. How would you like to have complete understanding? Now, that's awesome right there. That's a pretty bold claim, and that's what Paul says. He says, I want you to have complete understanding. And listen how he continues that. I want you to have complete understanding in order that they may know the mystery of God, namely Christ. In other words, if you have complete understanding, that will lead you to a knowledge of Christ. Or vice versa. He says, because in Christ, in whom are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. He says that in Christ Jesus, all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge about everything that you would ever need to know life, politics, religion, relationships, school, it doesn't matter. Everything is hidden in Christ, that Christ is the center of all wisdom, of all truth, of all knowledge. That's a pretty bold statement. And he says, I tell you this so that no one may deceive you by fine-sounding arguments. There's some fine-sounding arguments out there that are easy to deceive us. He goes on in verse 8, see to it that no one takes you captive through hollow and deceptive philosophy, which depends on human tradition and the basic principles of this world rather than on Christ. Paul says there's some deceptive philosophies out there. They sound really smart, but don't be taken in on them. The way you can tell the things that are false from the things that are true are based on Christ. They're based on Him. He is the foundation. He is the authority. What He has said, everything will line up with that if it's true. If it's not, it might sound really good. It might sound really smart. But if it doesn't mesh, if it doesn't rest on the authority of Christ, then it's a deceptive argument, and you have to be careful. I like how the New Living Translation puts that last verse. He says, don't let anyone capture you with empty philosophies and high-sounding nonsense that come from human thinking and from the spiritual powers of this world rather than Christ. Paul says there's deceptive philosophy out there. It comes from human thinking. It comes when thinking that people are really smart, like the video before. You know, it's easy for us to think that we're pretty smart. We've arrived. We've got kind of the answers. But as that video and your probably human experience has told you, sometimes we ain't quite as smart as we think that we are. We think we've got something nailed down, and then we realize, oh, that wasn't exactly right. And Paul says, if it was true in his day, how much more so today? There are deceptive philosophies out there. Now think about this. Paul warns the people against being deceived, and he's trying to help them not to be deceived. If you're deceived, by definition, you don't know it. Right? Think about that. If someone is deceived, by definition, they don't know it. And so, on a personal level, if you are deceived, by definition, you don't know it. That's a little scary, isn't it? Right? Because if you knew you were deceived, then you would think differently about things. And so, but Paul says there is deceptive things out there. And so, just for all of us, I would encourage us to be at least open. Is it possible that there are areas in my worldview, areas of my understanding of how the world works and who God is and who I am and where everything fits? Is it possible that there have been some clever sounding human arguments that have taken me in, that have captured me, that have led me to think other than what God would have me think? And so, therefore, I'm not thinking accurately about that. He goes on in Romans chapter 1, writing again to the church of Romans, and as you see, every church he kind of gives these same kind of instruction to, because he understands there's two different ways to look at it, because he lived that, and he wants people to walk in the truth. He says this in Romans chapter 1, verse 18. The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven. Now, the wrath of God, we don't like to talk about that so much. Nobody likes to talk about the wrath of God. How many people would rather talk about God's forgiveness, God's mercy, God's grace? That's more fun. But if we're going to be honest with the Scripture, Paul and other writers, Jesus himself, talked about the wrath of God. And so if there is such a thing as the wrath of God, if there is some things that make God mad, wouldn't it be good to know what those things are? Wouldn't it be good to know what causes God to have wrath so that we could be on the other side of the equation? All right, so let's see what Paul says. The wrath of God is being revealed against heaven, against all godlessness, that is, people living less God or apart from God, and wickedness of people who suppress the truth by their wickedness. Since what may be known about God is plain to them because God has made it plain to them. Paul says that the knowledge of God is plain to people, and the reason it's plain to people is because God has made it plain to people. And so therefore he says that people who deny the knowledge of God or the existence of God are not being honest intellectually with themselves, because he says, and this is Paul, not me, all right, so don't be offended on my behalf. You can be offended on Paul's behalf, that anyone who says there is no God is not being honest with themselves, because Paul says no one cannot know that because God has made it plain to them. They might suppress the truth. They might ignore the truth. They might try to get, try to avoid the truth, but it is there nonetheless. It's one of those things that author Jay Buduchesky says that are things we can't not know. He wrote a whole book called that, Things We Can't Not Know. Right? He says just as virtue of human beings being made in God's image, there are certain things that we can't not know, that it's impossible for us to claim ignorance on. One of those, he says, quoting from Paul here, is the existence of God. He says you can't not know there's a God. You can ignore it, you can suppress it, you can come up with excuses, but you can't not know it. He just says you can't. All right. One of the other things that you can't not know, according to the Bible, Solomon, the wisest person who ever lived, said that God has placed eternity within all of our hearts. That explains why everybody believes in heaven. Right? Almost, you know, 99-point-something% of people, if you ask them, you believe in heaven. Now, hell's a little more questionable because that's not as fun to think about. But everybody believes in heaven. Might disagree on how you get there or what it takes or what it's going to be like. But the reality is God has placed eternity, that spark of eternity in our heart to know that there's something greater than this world, that there's something beyond the grave. God has put that within our heart. It's one of those things that we can't not know because God has made it plain to us. We continue. Verse 20, Paul writes, "For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his internal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse." Paul says there is no excuse for not knowing about God. There's no possible way that anyone could look objectively at their creation and not see the evidence of their Creator. Paul says it's a category that doesn't exist. Now, people look at it and come up with other things because they have been deceived by those high-sounding arguments that he writes about in other places. But he says it's impossible to look objectively at what God has done and not be able to see evidence of Him. He goes on, "For although they knew God," in other words, again, everybody knew God. There's no excuse there. "They neither glorified Him as God nor gave thanks to Him, but their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of God, of the immortal God, for images made to look like mortal human beings and birds and mammals and reptiles." Paul says, everyone knows about God. It's impossible not to know about God. You can suppress that truth and refuse to glorify God. You can refuse to make Him your authority. You can refuse to say God is the authority. But when you do that, there's some consequences. And the consequences, Paul says, is your thinking becomes darkened. Your heart becomes foolish. You claim to be wise, but become a fool. Paul says they exchange the glory of God for, he says, idols made in the image of man or animals. Let me put it in our context today. We don't make idols today. Who do we put in place? We don't make idols shaped like man. We just put man there. Whether it's us or other experts in whatever field that we've looked at. And Paul says, thinking like that is futile thinking. It's people who claim to be wise but have become fools. There's things that we can't not know. It's so obvious. I love what Dr. Thomas Sowell says, that it takes a high IQ to evade the obvious. I like that. It takes a high IQ to evade the obvious. And if you look around, the people that are evading the obvious in all kinds of areas are looked at by the world as being the smartest people. They're the ones that are looked at as wise in the world. But Paul would say their thinking has been clouded. They don't see things from a real perspective. He writes that as we continue looking at the last part of Ephesians chapter 4, verses 17 and 18. Again, to a whole other church, he's writing these same sorts of things to kind of drive this point home. He says, "So I tell you this and insist on it in the Lord, that you must no longer live as the Gentiles do." That is, those people without God. You can't live like they do because they live in the futility of their thinking. They are darkened in their understanding and separated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to the hardening of their hearts. I love the way the Message paraphrase writes this. Says, "And so I insist, and God backs me up on this, that there is to be no going along with the crowd, the empty-headed, mindless crowd. They've refused so long to deal with God that they've lost touch not only with God, but with reality itself. They can't think straight anymore." Have you ever looked at someone or heard what they said and said, "You have lost your ever-loving mind. What world are you living in? Because it's not the same world that I'm living in." Every time I watch the news, I have that feeling, right? I want to just scream at the television. Sometimes I do, right? I talk to the television. It's like, what in the world are you thinking? And then I remember, oh, Paul explains this perfectly well. Of course, people are going to see things differently than I do. People who have disallowed God in their life, who have not had Him as the authority in their life, Paul says that their thinking becomes futile. They lost touch not only with God, but with reality itself. They can't even think straight. And what are some of the areas where we're not thinking straight in our world? Right? How much time do we have? There's lots of things that I could say we're not thinking about straight. Relationships, marriage, sex, money, creation, lots of different things, areas where we are not thinking straight. Anything under the category of what used to be called common sense. You remember that? Now, if you're under 40, you probably don't even remember that, right? If you're over, you might realize, remember that thing, common sense? It was that thing that, like those things that everybody could agree on. You didn't have to explain them. You didn't have to argue about them. You could just make a statement and everybody would go, yep, that's obvious. Have you noticed there's no such thing anymore? There's no such thing as common sense anymore. In all areas, things that used to be just agreed upon and accepted, and it's like, oh, of course that's right. Now people will argue and say, no, that's not right. And in fact, they'll argue for the exact opposite thing. In all of those areas, in our relationships, in definitions of words like marriage, in all kinds of things. And in the words of the great theologian Dr. Phil, I mean, how's that working for us? All right? It's not going so good, all right? Because we've lost that, and the Bible says there's a reason why there are such critically different viewpoints in the world, and it all comes down to people's worldview. It all comes down to who is the authority in their life. It all comes down to what they have said and what they believe about God. Philosopher Abraham Kuyper said that there is no neutral position. Again, there is no such thing as a dispassionate observer to life. There is no such thing as a neutral position. So my question for you, and we'll talk about this more next week, how do you decide what's true? How do you decide what's true? Because the reality is, you have answered all those questions that I started out with this morning in your mind. You have come up with an answer. You have faith assumptions about life and about God and about how things are supposed to work, about eternity, about human nature, about moral truth and what you should or shouldn't do. And the reality is, we have based our lives on those assumptions. We have based our lives on the worldview that we have adopted, whether we've thought about it or not. And Paul would say, just so you know, there's two totally distinct ways to look at the world, and what you believe about God is going to be the difference maker in how you view life. And Jesus said, if you want life to work, I mean, you can try all these other things, but if you want life to work, you should look at it in a certain way. And that's what we're going to be looking at over the next several weeks.